Welcome, everybody. My name is Jonathan Gustin from PurposeGuides.org. I'm the founder and lead teacher of Purpose Guides Institute. And today I'm really excited to introduce you to the work of a friend and colleague of mine that I think you'll find really quite exciting. His name is Dave Talamo. And this dialogue, he's titled Therapy Gone Wild. Therapy Gone Wild. What happens when therapists align and connect with nature? So I just want to do a brief introduction of Dave. He is an MFT, marriage and family therapist, and he's the founder of Wilderness Reflections. He has over 35 years of experience guiding wilderness trips. He works as a therapist with both youths and adults. He's a certified wilderness first responder, and he's a certified Hakomi therapist as well. Dave is a pioneer in the field of ecotherapy and was one of the first quest guides to develop a somatic approach to questing. He's committed to the expression of joy and authenticity through the body and to helping others experience their own embodied selves in an intimate and ecstatic relationship with nature. Currently, he spends most of his field time apprenticing new guides and training therapists in the ways of bringing nature into the therapy process. So welcome, Dave. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Jonathan. Great to be here with you.
Yeah. Well, I think we should just dive right in. I guess maybe the first question is, you know, how did you get into this work? It'll edify people, but also give them a little sense of where you're coming from.
Sure. Yeah. Since I can ever remember, I always loved to be outdoors. When I was a little kid, that's where I wanted to be. When I was, you know, elementary school age, the same. And when I was about 13, I got to go to a wilderness camp for the first time, and a door just opened for me, and I felt more at home and more alive and happy than I'd ever felt before. And I haven't looked back. You know, by the time I was 16, I was getting to help guide wilderness trips, and that continued on through college and beyond. And what I started seeing in the wilderness was a certain magic that happened for people, and people's lives would be transformed. And I went on a search after I'd been guiding for 10 or 15 years because I wanted to find a way to do that work directly with people. How can I bring this transformation as an intention of the work that we're doing? And during that time, I went back to graduate school to get a master's in counseling and kind of pursue that therapy track, but always kind of keeping this one eye on how can I do deeper work with people in nature, in the wilderness, and kind of founded Wilderness Reflections out of that and the Wilderness Quest work that we do there. And kind of in a parallel track, my therapy work continued to evolve as well. And at a certain point, I was really kind of at a crossroads. I realized, okay, I can do indoor therapy with people, and there's great things about that. And I can do these Wilderness Quest trips and other wilderness rites of passage, and that's awesome. But where are the bridges between them? I still felt too separate, those two kinds of work. And I remember one evening, I was coming home after a long day of doing therapy work and feeling a little drained and tired. And I just happened to look up over a ridge, and it was starry night, and I just got it. I knew I had to find a way to bridge the nature work and the wilderness work. And so I just started experimenting and exploring and studying, and it's been an evolution since then of figuring out how can I bring nature into the therapy process and how can I bring people out to nature as a part of therapy as well.
Great. Now that really gives me a little taste of your work. You know, there's this work. So, you know, in preparing for this interview, I was looking at your website, and there's a word, I've heard it, but I think a lot of people may not be familiar with it, which is ecotherapy. Can you just sort of unpack that a little bit?
Sure.
For us?
Sure, yeah, it's kind of a new term. Ecotherapy, it's kind of the applied, not kind of, it is the applied branch of eco-psychology, or the way I like to put it is that's psychology and therapy as if humans were actually a part of the natural world. It's like, oh yeah, we are, aren't we? And what is how is therapy informed and influenced by that? remembering that humans are part of nature, we're animals, we're always in the natural environment, even when we're indoors, we're on Earth, we're not somewhere else, we're not totally cut off from that, and that's kind of a simple overview, kind of simple definition. At this point, you know, one categorization of how people think about ecotherapy, there are sort of five categories of what it can look like. One of those is animal-assisted therapy, when you're working with therapy dogs or equine, you know, horse-related therapy work. And then the second is horticultural therapy, which is working with plants. And again, like the work with animals, it can happen indoors or outdoors, but working with the nurturing of plant life. It's an awesome thing. Even at the level of research, there's some research out there now that after 20 minutes with your hands in the soil, there's a natural biochemical effect of an antidepressant nature in the body. So get your hands in the dirt for 20 minutes, you're going to start feeling better.
Wow. You know,
if you're feeling a little blue. So there's that plant-based work. There's the wilderness work, like the wilderness therapy that's being done, the wilderness rites of passage, the wilderness reflections does. There's a fourth category, which is the nature connection work. There's all kinds of programs doing that now, bringing more awareness to nature and the parts of nature and how do I relate to them. And then lastly, there's the what's called the ecological grief work, which is something that's really up and coming because of what's happening in the world with climate change and species extinctions and overpopulation and all of that. How do we live with that? How do we grieve that? How do we respond to that? So that's a whole branch of what ecotherapy is as well. And that's kind of a short little categorizing overview.
Well, that's wonderful. I really didn't know a lot of that. Well, each one of those would be its own interview. So maybe you could pick one that you feel most excited about, most resonant with, that's bringing you alive now, and just, you know, let's go a little deeper into it. So what's your, I don't think you're doing equine therapy, for instance. What's the work that's really grabbing your attention?
Sure. What's most alive for me and for the people I train is that intersection of somatic therapy or body-oriented therapy and mindfulness and connection with nature. So just thinking of a quick example of what that might look like. There was a man recently I was working with who is feeling really stuck, which we can all relate to from different times of life. And he wanted to meet at a place that was out by a marsh, by a wetland, here in the Bay Area. And we were out there, and it was the sun coming out after a rainy few days, winter in the Bay Area, San Francisco area. And he said, oh, I just feel like I'm down in the marsh. I'm down in the muck. And we walked out into the wetlands and said, yeah, this is where I am, and I'm so tired of this. And what is this? I really want to know so I don't have to keep being here. So in that place and moment, that landscape was really mirroring back to him where he was and giving him an opportunity to experientially step into that, what happens inside of him and in his body when he's in that. And there were some real rememberings that came to him about early family relationships, kind of classic therapy work, but informed by contact with nature. And then he said, yeah, I just want to be somewhere different. I'm done with this. I know this old story. I don't need to keep staying here, you know, ankle deep in the wet. Like, I'm done with the swamp. And he said, and he pointed and he said, I want to be somewhere like that. And he pointed to this little berm, this little ridge next to the wetland. And we walked up there. And right at that moment, the sun came out and he just lit up. He said, yeah, this is more what I want. I can see that. I've been there. I've learned from that. And now I'm really ready to step up here. And in that moment, again, nature was supporting that opening. It could have happened in the office, but nature is really supporting it. And the effect of my inclination in that kind of moment is to really immerse him in that new positive experience, really get him mindful, which we did. What's happening in your body right now as you feel joy and openness and optimism about your life instead of my life is a swamp? What happens in that moment? And so the sun and the sounds of nature around him all were support for that and an additional anchoring, a reinforcement of that new state of being that was emerging in him.
Wow. That's that's fascinating. So let me say back my understanding and see if I'm getting this, that, you know, in a therapist's office, you know, the clinician and the client are aiming towards some kind of transformation to get unstuck, but you're doing that sort of more in a psychic space and just sort of psychologically, maybe somatically to a degree. But when you're in nature, you actually have the ability to enact the transformation or change. That it's like you can kind of step into it. You can actually be like the caterpillar, you know, I don't know if it's called molting or something.
Excuse me, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So molting, like what a caterpillar can actually enact its transformation in a cocoon, but it's a literal cocoon. Is that kind of what is happening here in ecotherapy, that the cocoon is nature itself?
Yeah, in a way, you could say that. I've never quite thought of it in those terms. But in a therapist's office, we talk about the container, the therapeutic environment, and that tends to be an office and the therapist's own kind of positive regard for the client and support of the client. And it's a very predictable, familiar space. And those are all good things in a lot of ways. When you step out into nature, partly I titled this conversation is, you know, when you align and connect with nature, nature becomes an ally, a co-therapist of a sort. So in this moment that I described, it just so happened, and as people tend to do, they will project or map their own needs onto what's around them. And if it hadn't been a wetland in front of him, he might have found something else to represent his stuckness and something else to represent his opening. But it just so happened that there are these spontaneous, I would call them non-random inputs from the natural world that are awesomely supportive to the therapy process, and that we're not alone and cut off. And sometimes in a regular therapy setting in an office, it can feel a little bit like a tunnel or a channel, and it's just you and me and our psyches in this together. And I think a good therapist knows what else is there, and that something bigger is really holding us as we sit in this work together. When you're out in nature, that's much more self-evident, that holding and that support, and then even that spontaneous input. That input's not only coming through therapist and client imagination and creativity, it's coming from the natural world, and I could give dozens of examples of that.
Beautiful. So I just want to play devil's advocate a little bit, because so many times a person will come in with, you know, anxiety or depression, and the controlled environment where the inputs, as you put it, are sort of limited in scope, mm-hmm. can help a person feel safe and contained.
Totally.
And so there could be a small cost in like, oh, there's all of nature here. So you know, people listening to this might be like, well, you know, I am thinking of going into therapy. Would I prefer to do ecotherapy or traditional therapy? Does these random inputs, these inputs from nature, can it be a destabilizing force? Is it scary? Will I feel overwhelmed? Or is it like having two therapists, but in an overwhelming way? Or, yeah.
Yeah, I would say generally it's not overwhelming. There's a whole art to choosing what setting and timing is the right place for a given client or a given need. And that's something that in our training we get into. Why would you take this person to the ridgetop or the beach or the deep forest at this point in time? With a lot of my clients, we're meeting some in the office and some out on the land. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that is true is that there tends to be a bit less containment in general out in nature, but there's still a lot of ways to craft a safe container, to choose a spot that feels like a holding environment for the client, but that still also leaves them open to the inspiration. I mean, you don't look over your shoulder in the therapy office and see, oh my God, you know, there's a flock of egrets flying by over the marsh. Look at them, how beautiful they are. Or look up there and go, oh my God, there's a hummingbird right there and it's shining red. Or there's this flower or this thing happening. I've had sessions where a baby fawn, a deer, has walked up and looked in on the session, right, while the client's talking about their own inner child. Hmm. You know, and you can't script these things, of course. I can't plan them, but yeah. There's always an attention given, if it's an outdoor session, to really making sure people are safe and comfortable, and there is that holding environment.
Yeah, it's striking me, you know, now the other way, so that there's a dynamic opportunity in nature. You know, for someone who's feeling stuck, the controlled, which can be good, nature of a therapy container, we can imagine someone being stuck, you know, for weeks or months or years and going back and forth in that, you know, therapy container. Yeah. But when you bring the dynamic, you know, power of nature, it's almost like, you know, nature is just like doing its, you know, work on you the whole time, and just it seems like, how could you stay stuck as easily?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And you know, just to go back to your earlier comment, because a lot of people do come in to see me, to see the people I train with anxiety, depression, the examples you gave, and if you talk to a lot of people, they'll say, well, you know, when you ask them, well, what do you do? When do you feel better in your life? Or where do you go if you're really down? I'll say somewhere outdoors. I go to the park. I go to the beach. I take my dog for a walk. And all of those things are obviously outdoors and out overtly in nature. There's also the bringing of nature into the therapy room, which I can talk about at a later point. But I think a lot of people intuitively know, oh, I can get more calm and peace and joy from some beautiful natural environment where I feel safe and at home or inspired, or like there's room for me just to let everything go or let the breeze blow all this out of me, or any of those instances. And taking that natural disposition that we have after tens, if not hundreds of thousands of years of evolution in the outdoor natural environment, combining that natural predisposition with the wisdom and the skills of contemporary psychotherapy, there's a lot that therapy can do to enhance the therapeutic effects of nature inherently.
Yeah. Would you, it occurs to me that perhaps the tradition of psychotherapy, classical psychotherapy, which came out of a medical model, there was physicians. And so they were treating people in the medical office where they had their, you know, tools of then modern medicine, that perhaps it was a mistake to a large degree to bring, you know, human transformation therapy, broadly speaking, from the outdoors inside in the first place. Is that something you thought about or?
Not so much in those terms, but I appreciate the thought. I think that was just what was available historically. And as therapy has evolved over the kind of the waves of therapy from, you know, the early Freudian to the behavioral to the humanistic to the transpersonal, this is a natural next step, particularly with what's going on in our sociocultural world environmentally and the impact of humans on the environment. I think it's just a natural unfolding that therapy become connected with nature, because that's what people need.
Yeah. Well, it seems that so many of the symptoms that bring us into therapy are, let me know if you subscribe to this, that it there's alienation. We feel like we don't belong to ourselves or to life. And, you know, going from our home to our office to the therapy chambers and then just circling through that, can actually reinforce that sense of alienation. Whereas you're drawing out the transformative process, right, the therapeutic process, out into a place where people can actually kind of experience and reconnect with that feeling of belonging to a place.
Totally, and there's even a term I've given to that. Psychology talks about attachment, you know, referring to our patterns of relating formed with our earliest caregivers and how we tend to bring those to current relationships. And I say, well, that's our human attachment model and pattern. and that there's a parallel I call foundational attachment. What's your attachment and sense of belonging with the earth on the planet? You know, do you know the rhythms and cycles besides day giving way to night and winter giving way to spring, summer, fall, etc.? And it's not so much about the, you know, being able to name every bird in your neighborhood as it is about, do I have an affinity and a familiarity and a sense of connection to where I am? Or am I only living inside the human imagined and created world, inside that bubble, and I don't know where my food's coming from or where my waste is going to or any of those things that are kind of just basics that any five-year-old wants to know of what is this world and how am I a part of it?
Yeah.
So that attachment is something I work on a lot with people, and see that once they just stop and sit on the earth for a little while, they start to settle and calm and their senses start to open and they see and hear and feel things that they were shutting down, you know, moments beforehand.
So in a way, you know, classical psychotherapy, amongst other things, helps one to find kind of a foundation in their own psyche, let's say. But you're going really perhaps quite a bit deeper, because you're implying that there's a psyche the size of the world and that we're actually part of that.
Sure.
And it's going to be, you know, a higher level of difficulty to experience that sitting in an air-conditioned office as opposed to being outside and really feeling that being a part of nature itself.
Yeah, and I'm not bashing traditional psychotherapy. I think it has tons to offer, and practice it some, you know, indoors, just bringing nature in the background, or in the slight foreground in the office. And I think people are really hungry for that deeper sense of belonging. And you mentioned alienation before. That's a huge factor in our culture. And as our connections get more and more through our technology and less face-to-face and body-to-body, I think it just makes the need to connect with the natural world and our own animal bodies all the more important.
Yeah. I definitely hear your, even apart from therapy, you know, an underlying vision of you know, actually just allowing yourself to be touched by, experience the forms and forces of wild nature, you know, that even if a person were listening to this and they weren't needing therapy, that you're really encouraging people to give themselves more time in the wild.
Absolutely, and more time. And in the wild doesn't need to be in the wilderness. It can be in the city park. It can be stepping out onto your sidewalk and just noticing the sky for 20 seconds, or the little creek that runs through your neighborhood, or feeling the rain fall on your face. It doesn't need to be, like, wildness is all around us. It's not just out in some far off land that the lucky people get to go to.
So, you know, in both, in for folks who are, you know, considering doing, you know, ecotherapy, and for people who are like, oh, wow, I like what Dave is saying, but what comes up is, you know, resistance. Like, well, I feel resistance about, you know, sometimes doing my exercise routine.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh. So, well, could you speak a little bit about what that resistance to going out into nature is, and how one can kind of, you know, move over that speed bump?
Mm. I think, like anything, you need to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying everyone should go do it, you know, in just a certain way. To me, it's, where's the curiosity? Where's the interest? Do you love the beach? Go to the beach. You know, do you love the night sky? Go be under that. Do you love animals? Go be with animals, or go sink your hands into the dirt and grow some stuff. You know, you can do that in a pot in almost any home. But that connection is going to bring peace and satisfaction and pleasure. So I think maybe a little bit like exercise, it's the getting started that's the hardest part.
Yeah, for sure. Have there been any studies, you know, on this? I mean, anything, mm-hmm. any sort of, so there's the anecdotal proof, which is wonderful, but has anyone done any studies about the effectiveness of
Yeah, more and more, there's a lot of research out there, and I I love the phrase, I can never know who coined it, but I'll paraphrase it a little bit, the scientists are finally proving what the poets have known all along. Of course it's good for you to spend time in nature. Of course that's healing. We all get that.
Yeah.
And more, there's a lot of research out there. In particular, a few things maybe worth mentioning now. There's a lot of research around depression and anxiety, and that time in nature heals that, and that's the actual physical time in nature is more effective than just looking at a screen of a natural scene. But even that screen is better than not having virtual nature in your cubicle. In one study in the UK, I believe 71% of their depressed patients in a residential setting had improvement of symptoms by just taking a little walk. You know, that's a pretty big number. There's research out there a lot about the effects of exercise on physical health, but also mental health. That's very well documented at this point. And it turns out there's a couple of synergistic factors that can improve that. One, if you turn it into green exercise, you're in nature to do your exercise, that's a whole tier more healthy, healthful, and effective for mental and physical health than just the exercise, say in a gym. And then a third tier up is if you add in mindfulness. So if you're out walking in nature, let's say, and that's great, and then you pause to take in the beauty and, you know, mindfully go, wow, that's a beautiful iris right there. I love that blue color. Just that little pause and that little mindfulness, maybe noticing how that makes you feel good in your body, that's going to improve the mental health effects of that right there. So that's some of what the research is saying.
Yeah, no, that's great. I find myself wondering, you know, who this work would be for and who it wouldn't be. Are there any rule outs for, you know, people who it wouldn't be a suitable form? Like what are some of the issues that you've worked with?
Sure.
Yeah, so let's start with that.
I've worked a lot with relationship issues and depression and anxiety, a lot with life transitions, with healing from abuse and trauma. Those are a few things that come to mind. I think there's most kinds of things that could be done in a therapy office could be done well or maybe even better outdoors. There's some exceptions. Some of the work that I do is working in a more, I'll call it imaginal way, in terms of getting into an open dialogue with some part of nature that one is drawn to. So, for example, a woman in her late 40s or early 50s I was working with really came into therapy because of difficulty in creating a satisfying relationship, lasting monogamous relationship for herself, and was really, one could dig deep on what are my issues and what's getting in the way. And at one point I said to her, well, let's find something out here that can help you. Something in the natural environment. We were outside in this session. And she said, I'm really drawn to this tree. Great. Go ahead over to that tree. Let's see what happens. What does that tree have to say to you? And it unfolded, and I'll come back to your question in a moment. She said, I'd never thought of this, but now that I sit at this tree, this trunk over here, that's like my relationship with my dad. And it's, you know, dying up on the top, and it's kind of rotting away and falling over. That was not healthy. That's not good. No, I don't want that. And this one over here, that's my last long-term relationship of 8 years. And that's all kind of got all this tangly stuff around it, all these branches hanging off it that aren't really alive anymore, and it's not really vital. But this one here in the middle, this is really what I want. It's alive and thriving, and it's got a lot of green leaves. And again, I couldn't create that. But for someone who's struggling to, and then let me add, she had a little dialogue with each of those parts, like you might do with an empty chair process or a gestalt process in an office. So in that, she's letting the dad branch of the tree speak to her. I wouldn't do that with someone who has trouble discerning reality from what they imagine. So someone who's, you know, has psychosis or something like that, it's not a good match. For some people who are having real impulse control issues, being in a less contained environment can be uncomfortable and threatening or unsafe. So I wouldn't do that. I pretty much always start with meeting someone indoors first to make sure that it's a right match and that being outdoors is right for them. Along the lines of the impulse control, someone who might be self-harming, you know, either in the office or outside, I don't want to expose them to things they might harm themselves with, whether it's, you know, I have a basket of rocks in my office. I'm not going to say, here, pick a rock that you can express your anger with. That's not ethical or useful for them. But pretty much anybody who's drawn to it is also kind of a measure. I'm not looking to convert anyone, but anyone who's curious about it or drawn to it, and a lot of people are, sure, it's a fit.
Yeah. So for the clinicians out there, I know that you've got a, preparing for the interview, I was looking at your website, a certification training in this for people who are, you know, already interns or licensed clinicians or coaches. You know, what do you teach? What do you mm-hmm. think the advantages are for them to add this modality to what they already know?
Well, there's a lot to learn. There's a whole array of new considerations of how do I do this ethically and safely? What about liability concerns? And the question you raised about the tradition of therapy being indoors and in this same container all the time. It doesn't mean you have to go to a different outdoor environment setting every time with a client. That can become a familiar setting too. But there's a lot of questions and we address all those. We really look at the pros and cons of working indoors or outdoors. Could always be indoors with nature as an intentional added value. It doesn't have to all be outdoors. And then mostly we're getting into some of the skills and techniques of how can you enhance nature's inherent therapeutic effect. So from a body-oriented, mindfulness-based way, how do you work with nature? How do you work with some of these spontaneous inputs from nature when they come? We spend a whole chunk of time on how to do trauma reduction or resolution work in the natural environment. One of my senior trainers in somatic experiencing, Ariel Giretto, she said, you work outdoors, that's the ideal place for doing trauma healing work because that's the ultimate resource and the ultimate thing that helps us slow down internally for anybody who feels safe and at home in nature. And she's, you know, one of the most experienced SE trainers out there. And so there's a whole array of different skills about how can you work outdoors with people therapeutically. Also, part of my training is really helping people envision what is my way. How can I bring what I already know how to do, not to teach totally different things, but how can I do the gestalt work that I do with people in this way,
yeah,
outdoors? And then there's support to how do you talk to people about this kind of work? How do you talk to clients? How do you talk to other clinicians? How do you promote yourself so you can do this work? And the truth of it is that there's a lot of clinicians who are really tired of sitting in the same chair in the same room for long hours. It's in some ways really not ideal for a client or for a therapist to be in the same field day after day after day and never be able to shift it up. And
yeah,
you know, the just as one simple example, when you're in a therapy office, you're really limited by the bounds of that office. And if you want to do, say, some boundary work and let someone, you know, pick at what distance and in what orientation are they most comfortable, and when do they start to get activated by any kind of boundary approach or incursion? When I'm outdoors with someone, they can walk 30 yards away and hide behind a tree if they want and peek out from it. You know, in my office, the opportunities are much less. You can still do great work,
yeah,
but just the possibilities are almost endless.
Yeah. You know, I'm neither a sand tray therapist or a drama therapist, but it seems to me, you know, the sand tray is the planet itself.
Exactly.
The stage for the drama therapy, you know, is just, it's you know, it's fully enfleshed and,
yeah. Exactly. And I say this, that it's all, it's like stepping into one huge sand tray and you can work with what's there.
Where is the training happening?
Training is happening here in West Marin County. There's an 8-day intensive. And then there's 9 follow-up conference calls, video calls.
So folks who don't live in the San Francisco Bay Area, they could join this training, and they just have to come once for the 8-day in-person part, and then the rest is virtual.
That's right.
Okay.
And people who are local will be meeting together for those follow-up calls. But I have people coming from Idaho and Ontario and Vermont and all over, because there's really a broad interest in the work.
Yeah. Well, that's really exciting. And are you available to do this work one-on-one with people here in the Bay Area?
Absolutely. Love to do that.
Do you ever work virtually with people insofar as you'll do like phone calls, but then direct them to do some of the practices and transformative work out in nature where they live?
Yeah, that works pretty well too. Okay. So we can meet by video call or phone call,
yeah,
send them out to do a piece of work, and then come and report back and follow up for the next thing. That works pretty well.
Cool. Well, we're just about out of time. We have a few minutes left. Is there anything that you feel just really want to share with the audience today before we kick off the call?
I would just say that if someone's interested in either participating in ecotherapy work or becoming a practitioner, I encourage you to follow your passion and your dream. If you're someone like that, you know that connecting with nature is healing and powerful and useful, and that is something that's possible, and that you don't have to be stuck within the boxes created by the mainstream of the psychological field.
Beautiful. How can people learn more about either working one-on-one with you or your training?
I think sure.
You have a talk coming up too.
Oh, yes. They can go to our website, wildernessreflections.com, and look at the calendar there for what we're doing. Giving a talk February the 6th, Monday evening, over in Berkeley at Rudra Mandir Center. And that's free and open to the public.
Monday,
February 6th.
February 6th.
7:15 p.m.
So if they want to reach out and ask questions, investigate
sure.
more, if any of these things are for them, they can go to your website, Wilderness Reflections. Reflections like reflection in a mirror.
Exactly.
.com.
That's right. And they can do that. They can send an email from there, from the contact form. They can call me at 415-339-7405.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. It's been totally edifying for me just to hear about your exploration of taking your passion for the wilderness, your experience as a guide, and your training and experience as a clinician. And it's not like you just sort of like threw them in a bowl and started stirring. There's a kind of an organic way I feel in you that all of these threads are sort of being channeled or transmitted through you. I would like to talk 2 more hours with you about it. You're clearly passionate and very knowledgeable about the subject.
Well, it's great to talk to you about it, and thank you. And you know how it is when someone's following their purpose. They get inspired, and they sit with it, and they work at it, and they find a way to give it its fullest expression and keep growing into that.
Yeah. No, you're someone, you're the delivery system of wilderness ecotherapist it comes off you in a really beautiful way. So thank you again, and please visit wildernessreflections.com for more information, and reach out to Dave if you have any questions about one-on-one work or about this amazing training that's coming up next month. So thank you for listening, and have a good day. Bye-bye.